Blog Talk Radio.
That's my command volume. Let's go down. You've been potted down for about 30 seconds. Thank you. What a delay we got from Blog Talk. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House Radio number, 617. I was confused about numbers last night. 617th show, and we're losing our heads over it. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're in the presence of the amazing
and delightful.
Thank you so much. This is CW, just telling you, lose your head over gas prices, but don't lose it over this show because it's going to be really great.
That it is. It's always great when we've got CBS Radio Mystery Theater plus some bonus material as well.
Yes. Specialty things going on. Like I told you, Dale, I told you I would make it back from Sleepy Hollow in time. So we did.
Oh, wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, if you listened last night, we talked a whole lot about different forms or different ways or even different people who have lost their head or didn't lose their head, like in the case of Jane Mansfield, great urban legend there. I was thinking, who was your favorite movie executioner? Do either of you have a favorite movie executioner or beheading type thing from the film?
Let's see. I'm thinking perhaps, with all due respect to Boris Karloff in, I believe he was the London Executioner. I can't remember the movie's title.
That's my favorite. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't forget Sweeney Todd.
Oh.
And I believe... When it comes to the female persuasion, I'm sure she did take off their heads. We just never saw it. But Geraldine Page and Whatever Happened to Aunt Alice?
Ooh. I had completely forgotten about that one.
Oh, yeah.
I would have to go with television and the Kolchak Night Stalker, the Headless Motorcycle Rider.
That's a good one, Dave. And I know Fogg's
nicely done. If
you're talking Night Stalker, Fogg's Bean's in there, right? He's in the chat, by the way. We call Bob. And Angel's been going in and out. Little internet issue, I would assume. Either that or she's like, I hate them. I love them. I hate them. I love them. One of the two. I can't figure out which.
Well,
what you were alluding to. CW,
favorite
executioner is Mord the Merciless from Tower of London, 1939. Get this cast, CW. You ready? CW as Richard, Duke of Gloucester. Boris Karloff as Mord. Barbara O'Neill, she was beautiful as Queen Elizabeth. Ian Hunter. Yeah, same guy from Rock and Roll Days. No. As King Edward. A very, very young Vincent Price as the Duke of Clarence, Nan Gray as Lady Alice Barton. Who else is in this thriller? Leo G. Carroll was kind of young as Lord Hastings. Who else of note? Ralph Forbes, Henry Tudor. A historical story about intrigue and betrayal amongst the royals. And Basil. Is very sinister and a plotter in taking out other people, including, hate to be a spoiler, but he has an interesting duel with Vincent Price.
Ooh, intriguing. I may have to look that movie up again.
I'd like it to tell me what you think, because I just love that. It's the best non-horror film. It's definitely a universal and a good one.
Oh, very good. Oh, and speaking of non-horror movies and literature for Headless, don't forget in Alice in Wonderland, the Queen of Hearts. Off with their heads.
Oh, that's true. That's true, yes.
Yeah, she's
That's
a
true.
She is a meanie.
You know, when I was talking to my wife earlier today, talking about, I says, you know, why not A Tale of Two Cities, the radio version, which from Lux Radio Theater actually starred Orson Welles on the Lux Radio Theater, and absolutely enthralling. About times during the French Revolution there.
Yeah,
maybe we need to have another
drive-in. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
'Tis a far, far better thing I do than I've ever done before. It's a far, far better rest I go to than I've ever known, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
yes.
And so on.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
Classic.
With, yep. Introduction to Aub by Madame La Guillotine.
Oui, oui.
Wow.
Hello,
yeah.
We're talking about executioners. That's our CBS Radio Mystery Theater title tonight.
It is. According to the Arabian Mystery Theater, it's starring the wonderful Jack Moss. Oh, okay, actually, it was Arnold Moss. Somebody put the wrong name in there. But
maybe they were thinking of Jack Arnold.
Could be. But Tony Roberts, Marion Seldes, Arnold Moss, and Jacqueline Brooks. By a story by George Lothar. Turns all a wonderful, strong cast turns into a very intriguing story in jolly old England.
Blimey.
Oh. Right. Could have some a bit of fish and chips.
Yeah, you
fish
can.
Fish and chips. And
There's one left, and it's not too far from you, right, Dave?
It's one left, and it's the only one left in the country, Arthur Treacher's. And it's, about maybe four and a half miles from where I'm sitting right now.
Yep,
no
that's near you, all right.
You actually have a Arthur Treacher's fish and chips?
Yep. Yep. I actually was a fry chef for them. Maybe that's why they're out of business. I don't know.
Yeah.
Then I'll finally be able to tell all about the secrets of Arthur Treacher's when that finally goes out.
Until then,
I am sworn to secrecy.
Oh, yes. Otherwise, you're going to have the ghost of Arthur Treacher with Terry Thomas in the tow.
Yes.
There you go. Terry Thomas.
And then I'll be stuck listening to all those Jimmy Durante shows that had Arthur Treacher as a co-star in.
And I will apologize beforehand if this call drops. I am not the only, I guess Angel may be having internet issues, but I definitely am, though. Wi-Fi, maybe it's atmospheric, who knows. But if I bow out, I'll bow back in. Just want to give you a warning.
We will keep the fire on the hearth for you.
Thank you. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
And we should be all set to take off with our first episode then, there, the first part.
Sure. And this is episode number?
Episode number 281.
From?
With an original date of May 27th, 1975.
Moultrie had only 28 rounds of powder and shot for each of his 26 guns, which ranged from 9 to 26 pounders. He served pails of grog to keep up fighting spirits, and despite the rain of fire from more than 200 British guns, he forced his gunners to reply slowly and carefully, concentrating on the two biggest enemy ships. The effects were soon evident. The setting is the American Revolution. The story is from a special edition of Time magazine, On the World, and the week of July 4th, 1776, written as though time had been there to report it. You read the news of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, of Abigail Adams' arguments for women's rights, of the coming battle for New York, of Voltaire, Adam Smith, Mozart, Gibbon, Captain Cook, of Tories, Whigs, and Sons of Liberty. Don't miss this 1776 edition of Time. It's history as news, news as history. It's the one with Thomas Jefferson on the cover. For bright and beautiful music, this is KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
And the time is 10 p.m. CBS Radio Mystery Theater is next on KIXI. It's 7 minutes past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Bleak, lonely, evil. Such are the moors of England, where even today one can go for mile on mile without sight of another house or another human soul. Where death-dealing quicksand bogs and mires wait to trap the unwary walker. Where many who enter are not seen again. And where some of those who are seen again are strangely changed. For example, Sandy and Jack Burton.
We didn't see it, Jack.
Wrong, Sandy. We did.
We couldn't have. An Elizabethan headsman? An executioner in a black hood with an axe dripping blood? No, I don't believe it.
Sandy, we saw what we saw.
No, we saw what our nerves saw. We saw what that moor out there made us see.
You talk about the moor as if it were a living thing.
A living, breathing, malevolent thing that can kill us if we let it.
Our mystery drama, The Executioner, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther and stars Tony Roberts. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser, and Sinoff, the sinus medicines. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Way back in 1876, it was brewed and aged to deliver a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability found in no other beer at any price. I'm talking about Budweiser. And it's still brewed that way today, with pride, without compromise, to be the king of beers. The largest selling beer in the history of the world, for one simple reason. That Beechwood-aged Budweiser taste. And that speaks for itself. Hear it talking?
When you say Bud, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis. In God We Trust, America Speaks. In the words of John F. Kennedy, the torch has been passed to a new generation. Born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
Few will will deny, I'm sure, that weather and climate play a great part in our lives. To a large degree, affect our mood, our nerves. People in warm and sunny climates tend to take life more casually than those where the weather is cold and bleak. What I'm getting at is that one of the characters in the tale I bring you now is not a person, but a moor. Moor. The very sound of the word strikes a note of dread to the soul. Dread, but fascination, too. For believe me, there is a certain allure in evil, a compelling magnetism which some cannot withstand. Two such people were Sandy and Jack Burton.
Jack, how much further to Linton?
20, 30 miles. Not sure.
We'll never make it by nightfall.
We may not make it at all. The road is running with water. I try to go faster than 5 miles or so, the engine gets wet and starts to die. The wiring is soaking wet.
That old farmer was right. We should never have taken the shortcut across the moor. He warned us.
Oh, but honey, I wanted to see the moor. I've never been on a moor in all my life. There's a writer.
A writer who's supposed to be on vacation, resting and recuperating from a nervous breakdown.
Oh, no.
You promised me. On the plane over, you promised not a stroke of work till we got back from England. What's that?
It's wet wires. I better slow down a bit more.
All you've been doing since we landed is take notes of this and notes of that. You filled I don't know how many notebooks.
Well, I am a writer, and it's sort of second nature to take notes. Yes, I keep hoping I'll hit on an idea that'll pay off for an article. Even better, a series of articles when we get back home.
All I wish is you just plain stop worrying when you ought to be resting. And you... Oh, Jack.
It looks like we've bought it, as our English cousin would say.
You mean we're stuck?
I'm afraid I do. The water on the road's gotten deeper. It's practically a lake.
Well, what'll we do?
We'll see if we can find shelter for the night at that castle on the hill.
What castle on what hill?
That hill over there.
I see a hill. I don't see any...
It's shrouded in fog, but when the fog lifted for a second or two, 5 minutes ago... There. See?
You're right. There is a castle or it's a house or something.
You think you can make it that far?
Oh, I'll make it. Anything but spend the night out here in this awful, absolutely awful moor.
Trouble you, ma'am. My name's Jack Burton. This is my wife, Sandy. Our car broke down on the road below, and I'm afraid we need shelter for the night.
Not here.
But, ma'am...
I said not here.
Oh, now, just a minute.
Jack, don't argue. That man...
I see him, but big as he is, never mind. Ma'am, we're in a serious situation. Our car is stalled and what's practically become a lake. In common decency, you've got to let us come in.
Running? Jack, look out. That man...
Now, hold it, chum. All I'm asking... Hey, wait a minute. Get your hands off me.
Dunning, don't hurt him. Just put him out.
Put who out? In weather like this?
Never mind, Dunning. Too late.
Mrs. Drood, what's going on here? Who are these nice young people, and why was Dunning putting them out?
Sir, our car is stalled on the road below. Now, with night coming on and all, we were hoping you could put us up until morning.
Well, of course we can. Come in, come in. Dunning, close the door. Permit me to introduce myself, Sir Leonard Hastings Brooke. And this is my home, Bodmoor Manor. My housekeeper, Mrs. Drood, with whom I shall have a few words later about her lack of hospitality. And this is Dunning, man of all work. He cannot speak. He's a mute. But he can hear well enough and carry out orders. And you, sir?
Jack Burton. And this is my wife, Sandra. We're Americans here on vacation. We were taking a shortcut across the moor to Linton.
Yes. You can fill me in on the particulars later. Right now, you both look like drowned rats. a very pretty rat in your case, Mrs. Burton. We must get you both into dry, warm clothes.
You're awfully kind. I can't thank you. And... What's that?
I beg your pardon.
I heard it. I thought I heard...
I heard it, too. Someone screamed.
Oh, just a trick of the wind, that's all.
The wind?
Yes, yes. Howling about these old manor houses, it can sometimes make the strangest and most nerve-wracking noises. Well, I shall look forward to seeing you again at dinner.
If you'll come with me, please.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mrs. Drood. Jack, that wasn't the wind. That was a scream.
It sure sounded like it.
Oh, Jack. Jack, let's leave.
And go where, Sandy? Where?
So you see, you're not only dining in what was called the Great Hall in Elizabethan times, but at the very table graced by Her Majesty, the Virgin Queen herself.
Then, if I follow you, Sir Leonard, Bardmore Manor was owned by Elizabeth the First?
Her Majesty Elizabeth the First. Her Sovereign Majesty.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
Did she use it for any special purpose?
She? Her Majesty used it as temporary quarters while one castle or another was being renovated.
How did it come into your family, Sir Leonard?
Well, it was a gift from Her Majesty to the first Sir Leonard Hastings Brooke when he was knighted in 1584.
For performing some worthwhile service, I'm sure.
Worthwhile? Special might be a better word, or distinctive, or peculiar.
Peculiar?
My ancestor, the first Sir Leonard, was special executioner to Her Majesty.
Executioner?
head chopper, you might say. Little family joke.
Oh.
And many of his victims, I suppose, I should say Her Majesty's victims, were dispatched right here at Bodmore.
I thought that most, if not all, executions took place at the Tower of London.
Oh, most of them did. Most of them did, especially when a public beheading was considered useful. But there were times, too, when Elizabeth found it politic to remove certain malcontents, hotheads, other threats to her power in secret. And here, at Bodmore Manor, was where those executions were carried out.
Again.
That was a scream, Sir Leonard. Not the wind playing tricks. It was a scream, wasn't it?
I didn't want to admit it the first time. Indeed, Mr. Burton, I hoped it was nothing more than the wind, but since you and your wife have heard it a second time...
You heard it too, didn't you? You all heard it.
Oh, no. Only those on whom the curse of Bodmore is about to fall ever hear it. It's the scream of someone about to be beheaded, just before the axe falls.
You didn't hear that scream?
Oh, no.
Mrs. Drood?
I didn't want you to stay here.
A curse of Bodmore. What happened?
Nothing, if you follow orders.
What orders?
There is a room, the room at the far east end of the corridor where your own bedroom is, that you must never go into.
Okay, but why not?
Do not go into it, that's all I tell you. The room is locked, but there have been those who forced the lock and came to a sorry end. I warn you, don't try to enter that room.
What's in the room, Sir Leonard?
Believe me, Mr. Burton, it's best you not know.
Can it be that horrible?
Oh, my dear, horrible to you is but a word. On my 21st birthday, my father took me to that room and showed what is in it, and horrible became to me actuality. I beg you, as you value your sanity, as you value your life, stay out of that room.
Here, honey, by the window.
What are you doing over there? Why aren't you in bed?
Oh, just looking out at the moor, thinking.
The rain stopped, and there's a moon.
With black clouds scudding across it.
What have you been thinking about?
Not thinking, exactly. Wondering's more like it. Wondering about this whole freaked-out setup.
Sir Leonard, Mrs. Drood.
I'm wondering, could I do an article if I can find the right handle? Did we hear that scream? Really hear it? Or was it just the wind?
Well, Sir Leonard said...
I know, but... Well, was he maybe just taking advantage of the circumstances, us thinking we'd heard a scream?
But why would he?
I don't know. That's what I've been sitting here trying to figure out. All I can come up with is that he's playing some kind of childish game.
He doesn't act like a child.
No, but...
Come on to bed.
No, you go on and on. I'll sit up for a while yet.
Jack, what are you up to?
Up to? Me?
That room at the end of the corridor.
Now, whatever gave you the idea that I would...
Jack.
Honey, it would make one terrific article. If there is anything in that room, something really horrifying or whatever, or even if there isn't, the experience we're having here right now, I mean, the car stalling, Bodmore Manor being Liz the One's private execution place, the curse, the whole bit. I mean, I can sell it like that when we get back.
You are not supposed to be working. Dr. Delmar warned you.
Oh, and sent me his bill at the same time. Now, you don't pay that kind of bill and a few others that are bugging me by resting.
All right. Let's go.
Well, you don't have to go.
I have to. A question. Sir Leonard said the room is locked. How do you propose to open it?
Simple. You've forgotten that article I did on safecrackers and lockpickers.
You're right. I had forgotten. All right, if you're ready.
Come on. Well, coming?
Just the sight of that long corridor. All those suits of armor lining the walls.
Look, go back to bed and I'll...
No. Go ahead. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's something, isn't it? A big glass case filled with clothes worn in the 16th century, I guess.
No need to guess. Look at that one there. If that wasn't worn by Elizabeth I, jeweled high stand-up collar, flounced sleeves sewn with semi-precious stones. Oh, Jack, Elizabeth herself wore that.
Yeah, I guess she did. But look, it's the inside of that room down there that I want to get... What's that?
I don't know. I thought I heard...
It sounds like someone...
Coming from the end of the corridor. Jack, look.
What? Where?
There. Walking through the patch of moonlight. Walking toward us.
No. Oh, no! What is it that Sandy and Jack see? Wish I could tell you. Matter of fact, I could, but there's a place for everything, and everything in its place, I say. I'll return shortly for Act Two.
Yes, he will. We'll be bringing him just a little bit.
That's right. As the story begins to build and the tension begins to build.
Yes, it does. This is a nice tale here.
What seeth they, I wonder?
Well, hopefully CW will be connecting with us shortly. Angel finally made it back into the chat. Welcome. Join along with Boz Bane, CW, and good old Bob.
Yep. And an excellent tale of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
That's going to be the creeps, the heebie-jeebies yet.
Yeah, this is one that somehow my brother heard, but I didn't, and somehow in his collection, he shared it with me that I had missed this one back when, before the internet had them to help share with us. And so this was after the run that I found this, but boy, what a tremendous story. And you know, Arnold Moss doesn't let you down very often, that's for sure. He just so has such a dramatic presence, just like CW.
Yes, it is indeed. Oh, that wonderful accent, so erudite, so urbane, so Brooklyn.
So Brooklyn. That's
exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
You have a way with words.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, everyone in Brooklyn sounds exactly like that. They sound as though they're speaking the Queen's English. Hello, how are you doing? Yeah, I'll have a corned beef on rye, heavy on mustard, if you would be so kind.
Yes, on that thing that developed by the Earl of Sandwich, yes.
Oh, yes. He was from Brooklyn, too. That's a little-known factoid there.
Yeah, he had a little deli around the corner. Yeah.
A beer and belly deli.
yes,
but I can't imagine all the work that he did to get rid of that Brooklyn accent. And I know we've mentioned it before, but the infamous Jonathan Harris, Dr. Smith of the original Lost in Space.
Same thing.
Yeah. And when he came back, he went over and studied over there to grasp the accent. When he came over here first, to get especially in plays, he insisted on being called this British name, not Jonathan Harris at all.
Was that Sir Jonathan Harris?
Good heavens, no.
From Brooklyn. From Brooklyn, yes.
So just FYI, everyone, if you care to speak with that erudite, wonderful downtown London savoir-faire sort of accent, all one need do, say no money, no dialogue, coaches, just binge watch Doctor Who. That's how I did it.
There you go, Doctor Who.
Yep, that's true. You're going to learn a lot from television. I know that in Buffalo, our neighbors, they had escaped from East Germany back when the Great Wall was there, and had made it to America and didn't know a word of English. Now, the reason they moved to Buffalo, there's a small congregation of Germans / German Americans over there, because there was a Schlichter organ company. And so they all had work if they got there. And they learned English by watching television.
Wow.
So I thought that was very interesting. Hopefully it was a little bit more educational in the 60s than it is today.
Maybe less so. That was the good old days of the Stooges. Nyark, nyark, nyark. Educational? Yeah, maybe in a way, but.
Can you imagine? Oh, let's see. Oh, they must have been watching, what, the Goldberg? Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Broom. I've got a brisket in the oven.
I think sometimes the commercials were more informative because it would talk about a specific product, and that helped them to learn the products from there and to be working with the other Germans who knew English.
Because of that radio, I forgot the play it was with, but I won't forget. It was one of the hardboard detectives, and they were going on and on. Talk about product placement. Yes, I just had a cup of black coffee and Rye Crisp. Yeah. A Rye Crisp cracker. I had a Rye Crisp cracker with my black cup of coffee. We're walking down the street looking for this guy with a Rye Crisp in my pocket. I mean, it was my Rye Crisp cracker.
I can only imagine.
One more time. What
English.
Kind of cracker was that?
Yeah, that was a Rye Crisp
that.
Cracker. Yeah.
A Rye Crisp?
I'm pulling out my Rye Crisp cracker. I'm pulling out my gun. Crime doesn't pay. Have a Rye Crisp cracker.
Or else.
Yeah. I remember hearing a story about Omar Vizquel, who was our shortstop for quite a while, and a real good guy. And anyway, he first came to this country from South America. I'm not sure which country. And ended up being drafted by Seattle. And basically, he knew one word when he went to a restaurant was eggs. And he finally learned a new word. It was steak. And so he got there and probably ordered a steak. And they said, how do you want it? He looked confused and said, eggs.
Eggs.
I'll tell you what, though. He mastered English really well by the time he was being interviewed for his sports play. He really mastered the language very, very well.
He did.
Well, thank you, Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
We ate a lot of eggs before we learned the language. Plural. It's a lot of eggs, kids.
A whole lot of eggs. Let's move on to part two of CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Eggsecutioner.
And now for a look at today's top stories. Cost of living still soaring with no end in sight. The price of hamburger at the supermarket.
Oh, it's so depressing. The dollar just doesn't go as far as it used to go.
Cheer up. Your dollar still goes a long way in fighting birth defects.
I turned that radio off.
But the message still comes through. Help support March of Dimes research into the cause and treatment of birth defects.
Okay, great. I'll join the March of Dimes today and find a way of life.
Now we're in the Burtons' room at Bodmore Manor. It's a little past 3 in the morning. And as you can see, Jack is trying to revive Sandy, who fainted, I guess. But come, stand with me here by the window for a moment and look out across the great mysterious moor. Silent. Silent as a grave in moonlight. Brooding. Waiting. For what? For whom?
Come on, Sandy. Come on, snap out of it, honey.
Jack. What?
Here, drink this.
Oh, Jack. I fainted.
I don't blame you.
Oh, it's gruesome, horrible. I've never seen anything like it, if I really did see it.
You saw it. We both saw it. An executioner, a headsman, black hood, black doublet and hose, and the axe. Gleaming silver in the moonlight with blood, ruby red, dripping from it.
And coming straight toward us down that corridor out there. Oh, what happened after I fainted?
He vanished.
Vanished?
Or maybe he just slipped away into the shadows.
But, Jack, was it a ghost, do you think?
I don't know. It could be we...
Oh, Jack!
Easy. Who's there?
That awful woman, with her jet black hair pulled back and that long white face.
Would you open the door, please?
Yes. Yes, of course. Yes?
May I come in?
Thank
you. Are you all right now, Mrs. Burton?
Oh, yes. How did you know I wasn't all right?
Nothing goes on in this house, I don't know. I know the dangers that lurk here. The mind-shattering things that can happen. That's why I've come to warn you again.
Again?
Sir Leonard warned you at dinner. Warned you to stay away from that room at the end of the corridor. I knew, even as he warned you, that he was arousing your curiosity. That at the first opportunity, you'd try to find out what lies behind that locked door. That's what you did, didn't you?
Yes.
Take care. Don't do it again. If you do, you may not leave Bodmore Manor alive.
We are in danger of death?
Nothing less.
I don't understand.
No need to understand.
But the...
You saw the headsman, did you not? The headsman with his axe dripping blood?
Yes.
Count yourselves fortunate that you only saw him. That you still bear your heads on your shoulders.
Still... Are you saying there's a murderer in this house?
Am I telling you something you didn't already know? Didn't already feel? Haven't you felt its loathsome presence?
Who? What are you talking about, Mrs. Drood?
The moor. The moor, child. The moor that surrounds this old manor house. This house that reeks of blood. Its poisonous fog slipping under doors, through cracks. Smell it. The dampness, clammy and mouldering as the grave. Bolt your door, and do not leave this room till I come for you in the morning. Under no circumstances, leave it.
The dame is spaced out. A yo-yo.
Bolt the door.
Okay. But if she thinks she can keep me from finding out what's in that room...
She doesn't have to.
What?
I'm keeping you from that room. I'm keeping you in this room until morning. Oh, Sir Leonard.
I've been waiting for you, Mrs. Drood. What are you doing out of your quarters at nearly 4 in the morning?
What are you doing in my quarters at nearly 4 in the morning?
The Queen has sent word that she wishes to be present at the next execution. Her chambers must be put in readiness and all else required for her comfort. See to it.
Of course.
I've already instructed Dunning as to the axe. I want it sword blade sharp.
It will be. You can depend on Dunning.
What troubles me is, can I depend on you, Mrs. Drood?
Have I ever given cause for doubt, Sir Leonard?
Not until now. Take heed, woman. Her Sovereign Majesty, Elizabeth Regina, demands unswerving loyalty of her subjects. I warn you, try no more to save another's head, lest your own be forfeit. Car, Burton, none the worse for wear, I should think.
Yeah, if the wires have dried out, Sir Leonard.
See if it will start, Jack.
Right on.
Well, we figure Linton to be about 30 miles away, Sir Leonard, according to our map.
Oh, 30, give or take a few. You should be there in an hour.
Oh, less than that. 30 miles?
It's more like 60 on this road, Mrs. Burton. I say, Burton, your car sounds a bit sick.
That certainly doesn't sound good. I'm going to have a look under the hood.
The hood?
Oh, the bonnet. I can't find anything wrong under the bonnet. I'll give her another try.
You know, Mrs. Burton, I'm rather hoping your husband won't get the car started.
Why?
I lead rather a lonely existence out here, and I shall be sorry to see you go. More than delighted to have you stay, you know.
That's awfully kind of you, Sir Leonard. I wish we could, but we do have a schedule to keep to. In fact, we'd better. We're booked on a flight out of Heathrow next Monday.
It's no go. I mean, she just won't start, and there's no sense in wearing down the battery. These wires have got to dry out.
Well, schedule or no schedule, Mrs. Burton, looks as if I'll have the pleasure of your company at least through luncheon. And if my stars are right, perhaps through dinner, too.
Well, it seems that way.
I'll hurry on up to the house and tell Mrs. Drood she'll have preparations to make. You two can saunter along at your leisure. Enjoy the morning.
All right, Jack. Level.
Level?
What did you do to the car?
Me? To the car? What do you...
I know you, husband mine. I know you all too well. You're going to find out what's in that room if it's the last thing you do.
Sandy, I have to. I mean, there's something really hairy going on here, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it, because if I don't, no editor will buy the article I intend to write.
I don't care whether the editor...
I do. I've been out of circulation too long. Lord knows how many contracts I've lost, and heaven knows we could use the dough. Now, I've got a hot article in the palm of my hand, Sandy, and I mean to play it for all it's worth. Now, no more talk. That's the end of it.
I hope you're right.
What?
I hope it isn't just the beginning. The beginning of something I'd rather not think about.
Mrs. Burton, I saw you sitting out here on the terrace. Brought you a cup of tea.
Thank you, Mrs. Drood. How very thoughtful of you.
Not at all. Sir Leonard tells me your husband couldn't get the car started and you'll be spending the night with us.
Yes.
Well, if you must, you must. Can I get you anything else?
Oh, thank you, no. The tea's enough.
In that case, I'll...
Mrs. Drood?
Yes.
What you said last night, in the middle of the night, about the moor, what exactly did you mean?
If you need, ask the question. I cannot answer.
I don't understand.
Some things in life can't be put into words. There are things of the spirit, beyond words. Look out at the moor now, with the sun all rose and gold, setting in the west. What does it look like to you? What feelings does it bring to you?
Why, it looks quiet, beautiful, serene, lovely.
Yes, but within the hour, when the sun is gone, and the mists begin to rise from the boglands, and the moonlight plays strange tricks, it will be anything but quiet and beautiful and serene. It will be pure evil. Mrs. Burton, I strongly suspect that if your husband wanted to, he could get your car started. Take my advice. Persuade him to do so, and then leave Bodmore Manor. Leave as quickly as ever you can.
Hey, Levin. Now's as good a time as any, I guess.
If I could only make you listen to reason.
I am listening to reason, but mine, Sandy, not yours. Now, I'm the one in this family who has to make the bread.
Oh, you don't think I'm going to let you go there alone?
I would rather. If you hadn't fainted last night, I might have found out then what's going on here.
Don't worry, I won't faint. Not this time.
No. No, I can't be sure of that, Sandy, and I've got to find... What is that?
Drums. Sounds like muffled drums.
Muffled drums?
Yes, I've read somewhere that they were used just before someone was executed, beheaded. Elizabethan times, I mean.
Let's go.
Jack.
That sound is coming from the other end of the corridor, from that room. Whatever's going on, now is the time to see what it is. Come on. Now, quiet. Try not to make any noise.
This corridor... dark. So full of shadows. Smells.
Coming from that room, all right. The drums.
Shh.
Listen. What's that?
It's voices.
I know, but... Sandy, the door, look. It's ajar. Thin crack of light. You can see it.
Yes.
I'm going to see if I can open it quietly.
If you have no last words, place your head on the block.
Please accept the small bag of gold pieces, executioner. Dispatch me quickly, I beg you.
It shall be done. There now, your head. Place it on the block so it lieth properly.
Yes.
Hark! Beheading. Woman with a head on the block.
When I stretch out my hands...
The executioner.
That will be my signal for you to strike.
Axe raised?
Now.
He strikes.
Oh, head. Head. Rolling around on the floor. Oh, Jack, you... Oh.
What's that? That's out. What? Master Dunning, we are observed. That man standing in the door... Seize him.
No. No, wait. Now, listen.
Seize him, Master Dunning. Seize him. And bring him to the block.
I don't want you to worry. Jack and Sandy Burton are going to come out of this all right. What intrigues me, and should intrigue you, is not that they will escape... But how will they escape the headman's axe? The truth is that if it hadn't been for some quick thinking on Sandy's part, some of the quickest thinking on record, well, Back in a minute for Act 3.
I think it was the first time I can remember really going fishing with my dad. I'm sure I'd been with him before, but the first time I really remember it was wading downstream with him in an extra big pair of wading boots as he felt his way very surely along the stream bed, and I shakily held onto the willows, and we found a spot where my dad lifted his finger to his lips and said, "Shh, we don't want to scare the fish away." And then I remember that fish, the biggest fish I'd ever seen in my life, and it was on the end of my line. And my dad, boy, was he proud. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
I can't help thinking of one episode of South Park, but oh well. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Let's continue, shall we? In our executioner ways. Hoping CW patches back in shortly. I did. I heard Magic by Pilot. You know, oh, it's Magic. I wonder if it was part of the recording.
Yeah, it's in the background. Off of, you know, when you recorded it off the radio like that, sometimes you got some cross stations in there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I know with the recordings. And that reminds me of the good old AM radio, you know. FM didn't do that. They were either there or they weren't. But there really wasn't crossover on FM.
Yeah, those AM channels had a tendency to drift. I remember struggling to get CKLW out of Detroit, which was kind of rivaling Wixie 1260 at the time in popular music of the day.
Actually, it was out of Windsor, Canada, which is just the other side of Detroit. Yeah,
yeah,
it was Canadian, eh? It's Canadian.
Canadian, eh?
Did you ever have anything to do with shortwave, Dave, since you're a radio aficionado?
I don't. I know several people that do, and I guess I had enough
shortwave
trouble with
Dave.
English in my spelling that I didn't think I could pass the test for the Morse code, because you had to decipher so many words in like 2 minutes or something like that. That requirement is no longer there. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That requirement is no longer there because of the internet, because now you use internet as that as much as the radios themselves. People who did that, I know that we're on a side frequency, but a guy I knew at a print shop was a shortwaver. He could tune in our station on his shortwave radio, which was pretty cool. I did use a shortwave. My dad had a shortwave radio. It's going to end up at my house here, get it out my son's way. Anyway, my brother and I used to listen to it. We used to listen to the CBC As It Happens Theater on Friday nights. They would play old radio programs. And once we tuned into the English version of Russian radio, and the commentator was there and says, "They say that all Reds in China. There are no Reds in China. There is no red," you know. So it was always fun. You never know what you're going to catch on the shortwave bands. A lot of it was foreign language, of course.
There is no red, comrade.
Right. Only vodka and borscht.
Yes. There's a diet for you. There's a diet plan. Vodka and borscht.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, keep
fresh
enough
borscht.
To keep you going.
Borscht
keeps the borscht to keep the pounds on, the vodka to keep you subdued.
And not
well,
perhaps.
There you go. You just don't care. I'm sloppy drunk. It doesn't matter.
Hey,
times.
But I apologize for my phone fading in and out. I am listening on the regular internet, but for some reason the phone is not behaving today. But I am still with you, body and head, both still attached.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah, and this story is now, but he got caught watching the beheading. So, I wonder what's going to happen next.
Shame, shame, shame. Should know no better than to watch a secret beheading. Well, let us find out what happens next, Dave. With part three of The Executioner.
In a manor house that dates back to Elizabethan times, a frightful scene is taking place. A beheading. Ignoring the orders of Sir Leonard Hastings Brooke, owner of Bodmore Manor, and the warnings of Mrs. Drood, Jack and Sandy Burton dared to open the door of that forbidden room. To their horror, for on the very moment of opening it, they saw the great axe of a headsman fall and cleave the head from the body of his victim.
That man standing in the door. Seize him, Dunning, seize him, and bring him to the block.
No, stay your hand, Dunning.
Mistress Drood, you dare countermand an order I have given?
Nay, Sir Leonard, I dare but entreat that you give a moment's thought to what you are about to do.
Dunning, fetch him here.
I say hold.
You forget yourself, mistress.
Nay, sir, you forget who I am.
Who are you, then?
Minerva Drood, first lady in waiting to Her Majesty. I represent the Queen in her absence, and I have the right to give orders as she might do were she here.
But first time I've ever heard of such a right.
Your ignorance, sir, will not protect you from Her Majesty's wrath should you dare take my entreatment lightly.
But fair stands Sir Jonathan Burton, a traitor to England and to Her Sovereign Majesty, if ever one lived.
Jack, he's pointing at you.
Not proven.
Not proven.
He has not even been put to the question.
Yes, but I thought... Well, never mind. I shall look into this at once. Come, Dunning. We must consult the records. You, Mistress Drood, remain here with the prisoners.
But Sir Leonard...
Do as I bid you, madam. Dunning... Come!
Mrs. Drood, what in heaven's name is this all about?
Use your eyes, Mr. Burton, and I think you'll have the answer for yourself.
Jack, that figure kneeling at the block, it's
a dummy. As you can see, a storefront mannequin dressed in Elizabethan clothes. The head, just a dummy's head.
The executioner, the headsman in the long black hood. That was Sir Leonard?
Yes.
Is he crazy?
Again, yes.
Oh, good Lord.
Nothing to be alarmed about, Mrs. Burton. In any case, not until now. But I'm afraid he's begun to take a turn for the worse.
Yeah, but what's just happened here? I don't get it.
Let me explain. Bodmore Manor was, as Sir Leonard told you at dinner last night, a secret place of execution used by Elizabeth I. Sir Leonard, of course, knew this when he inherited the estate on his 21st birthday. You see, he had never been what you might call mentally stable. Learning he was the descendant of a headsman was all it took to send him over the edge.
He's harmless, you said?
Yes, or has been till now. Until now, when these seizures came on him, about every 3 months or so, we put on the little act you just saw. I would pretend that an order of execution had come from Elizabeth. Sir Leonard would get dressed in the headsman's outfit... The original, by the way. And we'd go through this mock beheading, even to the sound of muffled drums, recorded on tape, incidentally.
Good heavens!
Yes, it's all rather mad and ghastly, but harmless. Till now. Now I can't be sure, but I think his mania has begun to make more violent demands on him.
In other words, he...
Beheading a dummy doesn't seem to satisfy him anymore. He remains restless, unsatisfied. I don't like to think this. But I'm beginning to fear that he... He's returned. Sir Leonard.
I am in your debt, good mistress. There is nothing in the records to indicate that Sir Jonathan has been put to the question.
You see?
And so we must put him to the question. Master Dunning is at this moment preparing a Star Chamber.
A Star Chamber trial?
Is that not what Her Majesty would wish?
I suppose so.
As for you, Sir Jonathan, half guilty or not guilty, you will at least have the comfort of knowing you were accorded the highest honor of trial in Her Majesty's own tribunal. Come, sir, to the Star Chamber. Is it not true that you, Sir Jonathan, allied yourself with my Lord Essex in his abortive attempt to seize the reins of government, the attempt which cost him his head?
Not me, Your Honor.
Oh, you laugh, sir.
In God's name, be serious.
And address me as, what was it? Your Honor? Well, either you will show proper respect to this court, sir, or it will go hard with you.
Now look, Sir Leonard.
Be serious, and it's my lord.
Jack.
My lord, I didn't mean to upset you, and I'm sorry. Won't happen again.
Well, you see to it. You, deny any allegiance to my Lord Essex?
I do, my lord.
And what of your association with Sir Mortimer Shawcross?
Sir Mortimer Shawcross? I've never heard of him.
You've never heard of Sir Mortimer Shawcross? Why, you serious man, or are you again showing contempt for this court?
My lord, I assure you...
This court has heard enough. I pronounce you guilty.
Well... okay, I'm guilty.
And such being the findings of this Star Chamber, you are hereby sentenced to be executed at dawn tomorrow morning. Dunning, take the prisoner to the place of execution there to wait the headman's axe at dawn. I shall retire to rest until that time.
Look, wait a minute, Dunning. Come on, Dunning, no rough stuff. Play acting is play acting. This is going too far.
It is true. Warned him it isn't play acting anymore.
Look, if it isn't play acting, damn it, Dunning, let go of me. What is this?
The real thing, you foolish man, the real thing.
You and Lady Sandra will remain here while Sir Jonathan's execution is carried out. Within, I assure you, the next hour.
I beg you. Entreat you.
Beg not, entreat not. It will gather you no recompense from me.
Oh, Mrs. Drood, what are we to do? What am I to do?
Keep our heads about us to begin with. Sir Leonard, poor man, has gone completely insane. No question of it now. This time it won't be a store mannequin he beheads. It'll be the real thing.
Jack!
If only he'd listened to me, left well enough alone.
Well, he didn't. That's beside the point now. The point is we've got to save him.
How? We're no match for him and Dunning, even if we could get out of here.
Oh, we can get out. That's no trick.
What?
I read an article of Jack's some years ago on safe cracking and lock picking, that sort of thing. That bolt on the doors will be a piece of cake with a charge card.
A charge card?
I think I can slip that bolt with one of my plastic charge cards. But then what do we do?
Cross that bridge when we come to it. Well, it's coming. The bolt is moving, but I...
We've been almost an hour at it, and you said it would be simple.
I also said I'd only read Jack's article. I never tried it out.
The bolt's slipping. We'll get this door open all right.
The drums... the muffled drums. Mrs. Burton, I can tell you, you have 10 minutes. 10 minutes before that axe falls.
Now, look. Look, you two, this joke has gone far enough.
Dunning, take it easy, will you? The straps are biting into me.
Listen not to him, Dunning. Bind him tightly. Tightly.
You're crazy, Sir Leonard. You have gone stark raving mad.
No, Sir Jonathan.
My name is Jack. Jack Burton. I am an American, a writer. I am...
You are a traitor, sir. And as such, you shall die. Good, Dunning, good. Bring him to the block.
To the block?
Sir Leonard, open this door.
Who knocks?
Miss Drew.
Mistress Drew.
Not Mistress Drew. This is, in heaven's name, come to your senses. Don't you realize what you're doing? Drop the murder.
Sandy, save me. They bound me with straps. They're laying my head on the block.
No.
This nut, he's
pulling that black hood over his head.
It's true. He's going to kill Jack. There's no magic here to chop off my husband's head if we don't stop it. We've got to stop it.
How? Tell me how.
I don't know. I don't know. Wait. The costumes. Mrs. Drew, the costumes.
Costumes?
In the glass case. Queen Elizabeth's gown, the one with the high neck and the jewels.
What of it?
Get it!
I can't. The glass cases are locked.
We'll break. Oh, never mind. I will.
Help me! Please! Help me!
What are you doing? What good can those costumes...
Stop talking and help me get this on. Quick, Mrs. Drew, quick!
Help me! Sandy, help! Dunning, don't let him do this. He's crazy, can't you see that? He's gone right out of his head. Dunning! Sandy! Mrs. Drood, help me!
Open up! I, Elizabeth of England, call on you to open this door.
What was that?
You hear me, Sir Leonard? It is your queen who speaks. Open this door!
Dunning, it is Her Majesty. She's here. Open the door, man. Open it! Your Majesty. Your gracious Majesty.
What find I here? What knavery is this?
Well, Your Majesty...
Put down that axe this instant. Put it down, I say, or your own head shall fall beneath it. Put it down.
Yes, yes. Yes, of course, Your Majesty. I wished only to obey Your Majesty, to do my duty, to send from this world a traitor who threatened
your... Traitor? Sir Jonathan Burton, a traitor? Are you mad? I have no more loyal subject, no dearer friend than this man whose life you would have taken. Fool, leave at once. Be gone.
But Your Majesty...
Go!
I go.
Sandy, you saved my life. That costume...
It's the one in the glass case, Jack. The one Elizabeth herself wore. And it suddenly struck me. No. God gave me the idea that only Elizabeth herself could stop Sir Leonard. It was as simple as that.
Simple, perhaps. Brilliant, definitely. Mr. Burton, your wife has told me that you are a most accomplished writer, but somewhat inclined to have things your way. May I give you a word of advice?
Right now, I'll take anything.
Have things your way if you must, but listen to others, especially your charming and decidedly practical wife. A bit more than you have in the past. Otherwise
what, Mrs. Drew?
You may indeed lose your head.
A strange story? Yes. Incredible? Definitely. True? Well, I can personally vouch for its authenticity. How? Now what have I got myself into? The truth is that before I became an actor, I was a writer. No, wait a moment. I didn't say I was Jack Burton. I didn't say that at all. I'll be back shortly.
I can't find a decent job. I mean, it's not like I haven't tried. There must be somebody who wants me, but I can't find him.
In this entire city, now, there must be one person I can hire with the qualifications I'm looking for. Well, why can't I find him?
There's a fast, modern employment service bringing people and jobs together. Job Service. Last year, we filled over 4 million jobs. In 40 years, we've never charged a fee. We use computers, personal interviews, anything that puts the right person in the right job. If you don't have a job, or you're in the wrong job, or you're looking for someone to do a job, call Job Service, or you may never find each other.
We're working to get people working.
For Job Service, contact your state employment service. A message on behalf of the U.S. Department of Labor.
All right, then. The truth will out. I was Jack Burton. Pen name. Real name, well, you know it. No matter. Important thing, you enjoyed my story. I hope you did anyhow. And another important thing, very important to me, I've still got my head. I do, don't I? Our cast included Tony Roberts, Marion Seldes, Jacqueline Brooks, and Arnold Moss. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Mother, he came back.
Only for a moment, my darling. Just to say goodbye.
Where's Dad?
At the wheel. At the wheel. But I want you to know that even at the last, now that I see him as he really is, save a little mourning for him. He can't help himself any more than I can. Goodbye, my darling.
Mother!
What is it?
I can see right through you. The wall, the pictures, even the pattern of the paper.
That's because I'm already dead. You see, I had to grab the wheel and kill us both. Because we were poisoning your life.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicine.
Cheerful.
And Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Skipping across the moon.
<Yeah, there> Owen, if I may be so bold as to speak for us Yankees across the pond, huzzah and salutations to Her Most Royal Majesty Elizabeth II, the longest reigning monarch in the history of the United Kingdom, a platinum jubilee. Huzzah, huzzah, have a fish and chips on us, Your Majesty. Carry on.
The queen is half dead. Long live the queen.
Oh, hey.
Hey, that was nice.
Snazzy dresser.
I always thought that was a weird saying. The king is dead. Long live the king. Or the queen is dead. Long live the queen.
Well, you know, that's because the successor, that means the successor is already in place. The king is dead. Long live the king. And perhaps you might want to throw in a memory, long live the memory of the old king. I don't know. It would be one of those.
It was when Elizabeth took the throne, her father was king, so it was announced the king is dead, long live the queen.
Right.
There it is. It's pretty much cut and dried. Out with the old, in with the new. Let's get on with it.
Yeah.
This show is so educational. What can I say?
We're learning each other.
Yeah, and just for a nominal fee from our representatives of the legal representatives of Luke and Elf, you can get your own PhD.
PhD. All right. I love it.
Just dial 555. Give us your money.
Smarts. 555 smarts.
Smarts.
We've got the smarts.
An internet degree.
Yep. Yep. We keep the degree machine right next to the still.
Degree machine. Okay.
You know, and throwing in with our educational feature here.
Yes.
I just found this in the paper today. That the last Salem witch trial the witch gets pardoned 329 years later by William J. Cole of the Associated Press out of Boston. It took more than three centuries, but the last Salem witch who wasn't has been officially pardoned. Massachusetts lawmakers formally exonerated Elizabeth Johnson Jr., clearing her name 329 years after she was convicted of witchcraft in 1693 and sentenced to death at the height of the Salem witch trials. Johnson was never executed, but neither was she pardoned, like the others wrongly accused of witchcraft. Lawmakers agreed to reconsider her case last year after a curious eighth grader civics class at the North Andover Middle School took up her cause and researched the legislative steps needed to clear her name. Subsequent legislation introduced by Senator State Diana DeZorlo, a Democrat from Muthen, was tacked onto a budget bill and approved. We will never be able to change what happened to victims like Elizabeth, but at the very least, we can set the record straight. So there you go, 329 years after wrongly accused.
Justice? Yeah, who says justice isn't swift?
That's right.
Everybody.
Yeah. Good point.
Oh, my gosh. Well, she should have called Moose and Elk when she was in trouble. There you go.
Yes.
Yes. Moose and Elk would solve everything. For a low price.
Very low price.
Of whatever you got in your pocket, yeah.
Yes. Shake you down and find out what you got.
My goodness. I hope she haunts the place. I hope she goes there, haunts the whole doggone legislature. Just haunts the place.
Speaking of haunting the place, what a segue, yeah. Queen, you are, CW. As I just got back from Sleepy Hollow, New York, to do this little interview for Erie House Radio. You have it on your fingertips there, Dale?
Heck no. Where is it?
there's a lot of them there. Okay. Here we are, and here it goes. Wrong one. Wrong one. Where'd it go?
I like the tune, though. It was kind of peppy.
Oh, sounds like the Monster Mash.
yeah, kind of a Christmassy version of the Monster Mash.
It was under Erie House. It's got to be here somewhere. EH.
Oh,
it is. Right next to the one I hit.
This is Dave on assignment for Erie House Radio. I am just outside Sleepy Hollow at the covered bridge awaiting my interview, which I believe I can hear now on his way. Is that really you, Headless Horseman?
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet.
How is it that you can talk even though you don't have a head?
That you know it don't come easy.
Then why do you do it?
Are we gonna do what they say can't be done?
I understand you lost your head because of a woman. Just what did she do to you?
I saw the Louis M. Gathered in both headlights.
And what did you say to her after she did that?
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Before you realized that your head was gone, how did you feel?
Maybe I'm going dirty. Maybe I'm going dirty. Maybe I'm out of my mind.
At some point, you had to realize your head was gone. What was your response at that time?
Can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do.
Now, you only ride at midnight. Is there anything you miss about the daytime?
Working nine to five.
Is there anything else that you miss? It's been a lot of years. Do you remember even having a head?
I remember the time I knew what happiness was.
let the memory live again.
How do you now reflect upon your life?
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left.
And whoa, how long are you cursed to ride at midnight?
It's a long, long journey, so stay by my side.
I know that you're very busy haunting Sleepy Hollow. Thank you for setting up this interview. I hope you enjoyed it.
You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just sort of wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's all right.
This is Dave from Sleepy Hollow, New York, returning you to Erie House Radio.
Yeah! Get on, Horsey.
There you go.
Very nice, very nice.
Well, very good. Very good. I think just about... Wow, I loved all that. Even throwing in Gangsta's Paradise is very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Game of Gangsta, man. Just... I'm like, what is that?
It was either that or throwing Amish Paradise. I don't know. You know.
Okay, good call.
Good one.
Probably one of my favorite Weird Al videos of all time is that Amish Paradise.
That was a good one. Oh, very impressive, very impressive. Her Majesty would be, shall I dare say, we approve. We are amused.
I bow to Her Majesty. I bow to Her Majesty. Somebody help me up.
Yeah. Chickens are up my back. Trying to help Dave.
Yeah, completely understandable. So we have some more fun here, Dale, with your favorite executioner yourself.
Indeed. My favorite executioner, the one, the only, where'd I put it? There it is. The one, the only Boris Karloff from Tales of the Frightened.
Oh. Are you one of the frightened?
Yep.
It must have happened to you sometime in your life. You meet a completely strange set of people. They come into your life just as suddenly as they leave, and they leave you to wonder for the rest of your days. Was it real? Did you dream them all up? And why were you chosen of all people to encounter them? Here. Have a glass of port while I tell you the strange story of Henry Harper, a traveling salesman. It was in Shanghai, I think, shortly after the Second World War, that Henry Harper had his curious experience. Now, Henry Harper was a rug salesman, which has very little to do with the story, except perhaps to explain that he was a man who was used to hotels, sleeping away from home, and constantly traveling in strange cities far from his native London. So it was that Henry Harper found himself in an obscure Shanghai hotel, a guest for one night. In the morning, he had an important appointment with one of the wealthiest dealers in the city. Henry Harper was tired. The noisy, jostling Shanghai streets, a veritable melting pot of races, creeds, and colors, had given him a headache. His eyeballs were scorched from the afternoon sun. So it was that when night came, Henry Harper was more than ready for bed. He'd unpacked all his luggage, attired himself in pajamas, and read himself to sleep, as has been his custom for many years. But he had fallen asleep with the lights on. It was perhaps an hour or two later that Henry Harper stirred restlessly in his bed. His eyes were still closed, but a curious scratching noise came to his ears. Now, Shanghai's street noises had abated somewhat. Now the scratching sound filled the tiny hotel room. Henry Harper sat erect peevishly and opened his eyes to see what the disturbance was. Well, he was hardly prepared for the sight that greeted him.
seated at the dresser in the room, just at the foot of his bed, her back to him, was a lovely Eurasian woman, busily combing her hair as nice as you please. The woman's hair was fantastically long, its black length trailing down her shoulders to the floor. Henry Harper could only gape as the comb in the lady's hand ran briskly through her beautiful hair with easy feminine strokes. It was the noise of the comb drawing through the hair that had awakened Henry Harper. Before he could open his mouth to speak to the lady, she encountered some difficulty. The comb became snarled in a clump of her hair. Without a moment's hesitation, the lady lifted her head off her shoulders and disentangled the comb from her hair. Henry Harper had seen enough. With terror chilling his brain, he sprang out of bed and flung into the room next to his like a wild man. Four bland Chinese were seated round a deal table having a quiet game of cards. Henry screamed to them about the woman in his room who had removed her head before his very eyes. The four Chinese smiled up at Henry Harper. "Oh, that," they said in chorus, "that's nothing. We can all do that." Whereupon they all in turn lifted their heads off their shoulders. So you see, Henry Harper had quite an experience. Of course, no one at the sanitarium believes this, but there you are. I suppose people always expect traveling salesmen to have a lot of funny stories to tell. Oh, by the way, help yourself to a cigar while I step through the wall here and go down to the cellar for another bottle of port. I do hate to take the long way.
Ah, the great one, the great Boris Karloff, the Tales of the Frightened.
Yep.
Okay.
So what's happening next week on Erie House Radio, Dale?
Nothing, I quit.
Okay.
No, we're joining the Hollow Earth Society. Okay. Dave, you want to explain that real quick?
Well, you know, there's some people believe in the Hollow Earth that... there are worlds inside of our world, that kind of a thing.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I believe, let's see, H.P. Lovecraft in The Mountains of Madness, he touched on it.
Have you ever seen the beginning of the movie The Mole People? This 20 scientists.
Well,
he plays 20 scientists in two movies, and this is one of them. And he explains all these theories about... maybe the universe were actually looking in instead of looking out. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's similar to the Hollow Earth theory.
Yeah.
So for that, we do have a General Mills Adventure Theater, a Journey to the Center of the Earth, and a reading that was actually a production. We could have – I found a MindWebs version, but I thought this was better.
Readings by Roberts.
No. D.K. Roberts. This is a – I give you the story on him next week, but he was in many of our radio plays, and for a short time, he did science fiction readings for us, and I kind of wrapped it up into a production piece. And so it's just a reading like MindWebs was, but I think his reading absolutely amazing, and the story called Descending. And
yep, and then Saturday, CBS Radio Mystery Theater with... Hollow as an Easter Bunny.
That's right.
Some of them are solid.
What? No, not bunnies. Hollow worse than the Easter Bunny. I don't know. No. It's the Believers. The Believers.
No, but the show name is Hollow as an Easter Bunny. CBS Radio Mystery Theater is The Believers, I think. I don't know. Hey, that's what my calendar says. I don't know.
Okay.
Yes. So we'll be back next week. Hey, Gar the Ghoul running a repeat. I guess the ISP still isn't working for him. But just head on over to the Twitches and do that there horrible horror starring our pal Gar the Ghoul.
Yep. Got time for
everybody's
this?
Castle lights are growing dim.
Night, folks.
Good
There's
night,
no one left but me and him.
Hey.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
See you next week, folks.
Whoa! Perfect.
Almost perfect.
Turned out perfect on mine. Light went out.
Yeah. Well,
right after the door slammed.
Mine could be a little latent. Like a half a second or a second.
Who,
I don't know.
Who knows? Our times are never the same, and probably anybody else is on their timers. Never
We're
the
probably
same
not
either.
Even here together.
What?
And weird.
Yeah, that's quite a different variety of music there on that interview, wasn't it?
I liked it. Very, very esoteric.
From folk to country to rock to... rap. Yeah.
Hip hop, yeah. Rap,
hip hop. Yeah,
exactly.
It's called hip hop now, that's right.
Dave, you're a man of many, many, many talents.
Indeed.
Someday I'll find them.
I wish, I'm sure the libraries in where Gar is located must be open, where he could at least borrow one of their hot spots to do at least a live broadcast if he's so inclined.
Yeah, I don't think a hot spot would be enough to run a show.
Well, I don't know. They go up to 5G. 5G?
Oh, do they?
Yeah, some of them do.
I use 5G myself. I use that T-Mobile 5G now. Verizon has a 5G now as well. But I use that, and I timed it out. It actually was faster. It's actually faster than my Spectrum was.
Wow. But, I don't know. Maybe he would do better investing in getting rid of that and getting a 5G hotspot. I mean, I know you mentioned T-Mobile has it. I know
Verizon,
saw Cricket. Verizon, Cricket. Track phone has them.
Well, but I mean, those are phones. Are those whole house Wi-Fis?
Well, a hotspot is you can either do a monthly
plan.
Oh, hotspots.
Which... They have the hotspots.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
I have a track phone.
Yes, you do.
What is that, enough said?
It has
it's a flip
crank
phone
on
track
the side.
Phone. It's a flip phone track phone, yeah.
It is not a flip phone.
Oh, did you upgrade?
Yeah.
No.
Like a long time ago.
No way.
Dale, welcome to the 21st century.
Well, doesn't matter.
Oh, so you...
Getting there.
So now that squirrel that was running through the cage that was cranking all the cellular power, they are returning back to their tree.
I ate him.
Yeah. No. Well, no. He upgraded to hamsters.
Oh, ate. Okay.
Yeah.
There's good eating. The hamster. Mm. Ooh. But there's good eating up them in their hills. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Granny served that up with some possum stew. Ooh.
Yeah. It's more of a slurry, but
oh God! And I'm going to be driving to a pharmacy very quickly for
my work here is done. I feel a sense of accomplishment. Oh,
yeah.
that I took as my calling as a nightclub disc jockey. My job is to make you women ill. My job is if I don't make somebody sick, I have not done my job. It doesn't have to be a woman either. It could be anybody. If I don't make you sick, I'm not doing my job.
I thought the beer did that too. That helped anyway.
Oh yeah. If you drink enough of it, I suppose.
There is a song. I'm only here for the beer. Yes, I'm only here for the beer. I can't remember the rest of it, but that just came to mind for some inexplicable reason. Oh, and Cheeseburger in Paradise by Jimmy Buffett, talking about that. Cold draft beer, kosher pickle.
There was a country guy that had a song about how he likes beer. I like beer.
Tom T. Hall.
Yes. Makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer.
It makes him feel mellow. Makes him feel mellow.
Feel mellow. Yeah. Whiskey's too raw. Champagne costs too much. And vodka puts my mouth in here. So let me explain with this little refrain. As a matter of fact, I like
beer. I love beer. He loves beer.
Oh, and don't forget, there's a tear in my beer.
Oh, yeah. I forget why.
There's many a tune about the sudsy beverage.
Yep. And other adult beverages.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, what's his name? Thurgood and the Destroyers.
Oh, yeah.
I drink alone. Oh, yeah, I drink alone. He was drinking Johnny Walker with his brothers Blackie and Red, and I drink alone. Oh, yep. My gosh. Just listening to that song makes my liver want to cry.
Shelley West, Dottie West's daughter, did that song, Jose Cuervo. Jose Cuervo, you are a friend of mine.
God.
Did I dance on the bar? Did I? She's trying to figure out what she did last night after she did the drinking.
Awesome.
The song that is about the ultimate beverage. All day I face the barren waste without the taste of water. Cool, clear water.
Is that the song that I'm assuming you've seen at CW? I don't think Dave has yet. What is it? The Ballad of... It's an anthology western that...
Death Valley Days?
What's his name?
Tales
Tim,
of Van Gray?
Tim, what's his name from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's a singer. Is in it.
Oh, yeah. I know the actor you're talking about. He did a nice rendition. I didn't realize that was him singing. I thought, I know George Clooney can't sing to save his life, and he's the nephew of Rosemary Clooney, but apparently the genetics left him on the wayside in that regard. But,
yeah. Tim, not Tim
Sons
Ford.
Sons of the Pioneers were the first ones to really be known for that song, I think.
Is Ken Curtis? Asbestos?
Oh, Ken Curtis might have been with him at that time, yeah. But he was also a big band singer, as well as Festus.
Now, I knew he was a country western singer because he was with the Sons of the Pioneers. He's even in one of the old Roy Rogers movies, but I didn't know he also... Are we talking jazz big band? Like the Dorsey
big
Brothers?
Band? Let me see.
I'm going to look that up on the internet. I want to see what his voice sounded like. I've heard it. He also sings in the movie The Searchers, John Wayne flick The Searchers, that Natalie Wood flick with The Searchers. He sings in that one.
Ballad of
Buster Scruggs. He was a singer before moving into acting and combined careers once he entered films. Curtis was with the Tommy Dorsey Band in 1941 and succeeded Frank Sinatra as vocalist until Dick Ames contractually replaced Sinatra in 42. So, yeah, Curtis then joined Shep Fields and his new music and All Reed's band and dispensed with the brass section. ago. So then he joined the Sons of the Pioneers from 1949 to 52.
Oh, okay. So the big band stuff, I had no idea. I knew he was with the Sons of the Pioneers, but that big band stuff, that is news to me. Also, here's something to tickle your brain cells, the little gray cells. The Big Valley, you know, Nick,
yes.
Keith, Jarrett, and sometimes Eugene, that other brother that disappeared later on down the line, you know. Well, Nick, Peter Breck, started in singing. And there is a song of him on YouTube. I looked it up. He kind of has sort of a Dennis Day kind of voice, only in a lower octave.
Okay.
Let me put it this way. I liked his acting more than I liked his singing. But he could carry a tune.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'm just looking in here. He was son-in-law of film director John Ford. I didn't know that. Curtis was.
Didn't know that.
And teamed with Ford and John Wayne in Rio Grande. He was in Rio Grande. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He was also in The Searchers, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen either of those two films.
Now, this is probably going to get everyone's hackles up. John Wayne's okay. I mean, True Grit was fabulous. The Searchers is a great movie. I think Island in the Sky, I really enjoyed that. But there's only so much of the Duke I can take.
I've got one for you that I recommended to Dave, because I know both Dave and his wife would like it. Or maybe she already does. Maybe you told me she's familiar with it, Dave, but is The Quiet Man. Quiet Man is a very good movie. Typical movie. Not his typical movie.
And you know what? Ken Curtis is in that one as well.
Yeah.
The Quiet Man? Really?
Yep. Yep.
Oosh. Okay. So, and what was the other... Wasn't there another movie he did with Maureen
O'Hara? Oh, yeah, McClintock. McClintock.
That's the one. Now, that was hilarious. I'll give him props for that one. That was a hilarious movie. Him, Maureen O'Hara, Yvonne DiCarlo was in there. Jerry Van Dyke and Stephanie Powers. And I think Chill Wills was in there, too.
I believe he was.
Yeah. Here's a voice. He was a singer, too, before he got into the acting.
Oh,
matter
man.
Of fact, on the movie Way Out West that Laurel and Hardy did.
He later went on
that
to
group
cartoons.
That singing, that group that was singing before they were entering the hotel, and they did that dance number. Chill Willis was one of the singers in that.
Wow. Oh, I know another movie that he sung in. It was the movie with Robert Preston called Tulsa. And who is the freaking actress? All I can think of is the actress now who looks a lot like her, Stockard Channing. And she said her whole family looks like this actress, and I can't think. Susan Hayward.
Susan Hayward.
Yeah, and he was singing in a saloon. He is her character's cousin. He calls everybody cousin. Oh, cousin. How you doing, cousin? And he said, and he's tickling the ivory, singing tofu.
If you've seen that many westerns, promise me you'll try to see is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. There's six stories, okay? So the singer guy, he's Tim Blake Nelson. He was one of the two hillbillies in Old Brother, Where Art Thou? He's in the first story, and it is hilarious. But the stories get progressively darker as they go. Liam Neeson's in one of them. What's his name? What's that one singer's from the 70s name? He had the real scratchy voice. He was the inventor in Mystery Men. What the hell's his name?
He was the inventor. See, not the shoveler, the bowler.
No, the inventor guy, the crazy inventor guy that gave them their gadgets.
That
helped them build the jitney. Remember that?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember all the actors.
What the hell?
Yeah.
He sang that one song about the piano's been drinking, not me.
Tom Waits.
Thank you. That's who it is. Tom Waits is in it. He plays a great role as a prospector in his little story. Liam Neeson plays a dark character. There's some of these younger stars that you might recognize who... As Cantina Scum. Yeah, there's just a lot of people in it.
Liam Neeson, now, does he still have his Irish accent in full blown, or does he neutralize it in it at all?
I think he neutralizes it a little bit.
Because did you say it's not a great movie? It's a funny movie. It's not great, but it's funny. It was by Scott McFarlane, A Million Ways to Die in the West. And he works Family. Yeah, Family Guy. And they had this joke on there about Liam Neeson with that full Irish accent. And he got him to do that movie to keep his full Irish accent out in the middle of the West.
I thought it was fun, a little bit funny, but I just thought, you know, you didn't have to use the language you used in that. It could, you know, it would have been just as funnier, in my estimation, funnier if they just didn't use the language they used.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit salty. I'll give them that. It was a little salty. And what was that called? The Ballad of what now?
Buster Scruggs. It's the Coen Brothers. It's a Coen Brothers movie.
Buster Scruggs. Okay.
It's an anthology movie with six stories, and the first two are funny. The first one's hilarious. The second one's kind of funny, but starts getting a little intense, and then they get more dramatic. And one of the stories is an absolute heartbreak, and the last one is borderline supernatural. It's really good and dark. Mm. It's cool. It's and they're all westerns. You know what I mean? All the stories, all the vignettes. I think it's well worth a watch. Each of the stories stand alone. You know what I mean?
Good. Sounds like that. I shall give that a look-see. But with that, gentlemen, I must be away. Again, thanks for putting up with the technical difficulties of the phone.
Worked out fine, though.
Thanks for
the most part.
Yeah, thanks for keeping in and coming back in again. It was had to be frustrating on your end.
Yeah, you know, just slamming a phone around and screaming and yowling and crying and howling and scratching at the wall.
You flatter us. No, you flatter us.
Of course. But with your kind permission.
Your family,
now
there's no escape. There's no escape.
No escape.
Except to say those magic words to bring in that magic guy, CW. That's the only escape there is.
Oh, there you are. Oh, dear Jimmy, Mr. Durante, the stage is yours.
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and it could think it do.
Whatever.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Thank you.
boom, 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 bo